This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
We are family. Get up, everybody, and sing.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters. How to discipline a child was one of the most common questions people came to talk to me about when I was a temperament counselor at Kaiser in Richmond. First off, I talked to parents about the meaning of the word discipline. You know, as I understand it, discipline means to teach. And before I would offer suggestions, I would talk about behavioral styles and also various factors in a child's life. There isn't a one-size-fits-all formula for discipline, and looking through the lens of temperament is an effective way to understand your child's behavior as you consider the best approach to teach social skills or help a child control their impulses. Once you understand what motivates a child's actions, you can move towards that child with love and a sense of what limits or corrections or problem-solving strategies are needed. And of course, understanding your own temperament is an important piece of the puzzle. I'm Nurse Rona, and I'm here each week to present important topics to parents, grandparents, foster parents, childcare providers, big sisters, big brothers, or anyone who cares for and about children. You know, some children are mellow and can easily go with the flow. Others are little energizer bunnies, going from morning till night, getting into everything. You might have a child who's cautious and also struggles with transitions and changes, like getting into the car when you're trying to get to work on time. Or maybe your child cries every morning when it's time to say goodbye at childcare. Today, we're lucky to have three temperament experts here in the studio. So get your coffee, relax, and think about your children's behaviors and how their temperament influences their day-to-day experience. The lines are open this morning, toll-free, 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. Today, as always, we want to hear from you. What's hard for you, and what do you want to know about discipline, temperament, or power struggles? Joining us in the studio this morning is Mary Sheedy Krasinka, a best-selling author and internationally recognized lecturer and parent educator. Her books, Raising Your Spirited Child, Kids, Parents, and Power Struggles, and Sleepless in America, have been translated into 9 languages. Mary provides training nationally and internationally for families and professionals. Licensed as a parent educator and early childhood teacher, she has pioneered efforts to bring temperament, neurobiology, the importance of sleep, and emotion coaching into homes, schools, medical practices, and businesses. She's here all week in the Bay Area, spreading her wisdom. Known for her real-life examples, Mary links research-based information with typical challenging behaviors and provides practical solutions which really work. Born on a third-generation dairy farm, Mary resides with her husband in St. Paul, Minnesota, and she's the proud mother of 2 grown children. Mary Sheedy Krasinka, it's great to have you back.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, you've been an inspiration to me, really, since 1991 when I started my work in temperament counseling at Kaiser. And your book, Raising Your Spirited Child, is a real gift to parents. I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
You know, I'd like you to start off this morning telling us how you realized that understanding temperament was often a missing piece in the puzzle of child development and also in the parenting advice and training that was going on.
My interest began very personally. I was teaching classes for parents when my son was born. And it was an interesting experience because at the time, many of the strategies recommended for kids were not working well with my own son. And it was very humbling. And I couldn't quite figure out why that was. And then my daughter was born, and she was like the classic baby that was in all of the books. And so all of a sudden I looked at, wait a minute, same mom, same dad, why are these children so different? And I realized that in order to work with our children and develop a relationship with them, we have to discover who's come to be with us. And temperament gives us that answer.
Beautiful. And, you know, I think that's why I've loved teaching it for so long, and I never get tired of it. I had the same experience. My first and second child in particular were so different. And I didn't understand how that could be since I wasn't all that different. So it does. It wakes you up to realize there's something else going on here to understand.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And every child has a temperament. There's a genetic element to how we respond to the world around us, and it's how sensitive we are, how energetic, how intensely we react. And inside of us is an arousal system. And for some children and adults as well, because we grow up to be spirited adults as well as children, is that arousal system is triggered more easily. It's kind of like the difference between having a Chevy truck engine inside of you, steady, going along with the flow, versus a Lamborghini.
Yes, and so that's good for people to understand. Those of you who don't know the term temperament, it's really a child's style. It's their behavioral style. It's how they're born, and yet the environment does influence temperament. But it's basically who you are as a person naturally.
Yes, and absolutely the environment does influence it. Do we as adults step in and calm that child and teach them a response that works better? And when we do that, we actually begin to help them develop new pathways in their brain so that they don't have quite such an intense reaction, because it's physical. It's a heart rate. It's a pulse rate. It's activity in the brain that changes to their response to the world.
Good. And that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. Also joining us in the studio is Stephanie Agnew. She's a parent education coordinator of Parents Place in San Mateo County. She has an extensive background in early childhood education with 20 years of teaching experience. She was trained at the Bing Nursery School in Palo Alto while getting her degree at Stanford, and has taught all preschool age groups from toddlers to young fives. She owned her own small preschool for 5 years and worked as a parent educator at the Children's Health Council. Stephanie's specialties include child behavior management, kindergarten readiness, school choices, and preschool teacher training. And she'll even go and do observations of children at home or at a school. She has two delightful daughters in their 20s. Stephanie Agnew, welcome back to our show.
Thanks, Rana. Great to see you again.
And yes, I've met your daughters, so I can say they're delightful. You know, I'm sure they taught you a lot about temperament also.
Absolutely.
So why do you find it so important in working with parents, teachers, and also with children to understand temperament?
Well, I always knew that there were lots of differences in young children from my work in early childhood and preschools, but it wasn't until I had my own two children and lived the realities of the difference in personality and temperament that I also agreed that, yes, this was absolutely true. And Mary's work has been the cornerstone to so much of what I've been doing in my work for so many years as well.
Yes, we learn a lot from our kids, that's for sure. So thank you for all those adult children out there who might listen to this show at some point. You've taught us a lot. Well, we want to hear from you this morning. 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. We're talking about your child's temperament, how it helps to inform you on the kinds of discipline that's most effective and respectful of their individual differences. We have some books to give away of Mary's, and we have a couple of passes to give away to some of the workshops she'll be doing throughout the Bay Area this week. So call us with your questions, and we'll start this morning with Betsy. She's joining us from San Francisco. Hi, Betsy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Good. You're wide awake this morning.
Yes, I am.
So, in a nutshell, how old's your child, and what are you dealing with?
I have a son who's almost 23 months, and he is very active and very persistent. And when he wants to do what he wants to do it. And we find that when we tell him, no, you can't do that, or try to pull him away from something that he's been enjoying, he just screams. He throws himself on the floor, and when we try to distract him, it just seems to make matters worse. He just screams harder. I've tried Dr. Harvey Karp's toddlerese with him. That just seems to make things worse, and I just don't know how to. He's clearly very frustrated.
Yes, you're frustrated. He's frustrated.
Yeah, and I mean, I try to stay there with him. I try to you know, say things like, I know you're sad, I know you're frustrated, and identify with him, but it just doesn't help. The only thing I found so far that even temporarily helps is to give him a back rub. We've tried timeouts, and sometimes he hits me. We've tried timeouts.
Yeah.
Those don't seem to be having an effect. And I don't know if he's too young for me to be trying to put limits on him. I don't know if this is just because he's almost two.
Well, this is a great, rich question. We could spend the whole show talking with you, but we'll try and kind of narrow it down here. Let's start with Mary Kasinka.
Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning.
Can you give me a specific example, maybe from this morning or yesterday, where you had to tell him no?
Yesterday we were at the park, and he'd been running around playing for a while, and it was time to go. It was, you know, getting past his lunchtime, and I picked him up to take him to go, and he started hitting me on the head and screaming. And then my husband took him, and he was still wriggling and writhing, and we got him back to the car, had to practically force him into the car seat. So that was one example.
Okay. So one of the things we know about your son is that he is slow to transition. And as you said, he's persistent and energetic. These are persistent and active. And so we're remembering, first of all, that that energy and persistence are traits that are very positive traits. He's committed to his goals and will persist. So these are good things about him. And at the same time, that combined with slow to transition makes it difficult to stop and start activity. So you can predict that anytime you need to stop or start something, he needs a little help. And so for him at not quite two, we need to give him closure. So about 10 minutes before it's time to go, we need to tell him, okay, it's almost time to go. So what do you need to do? How many more times do you want to go down the slide? And obviously, as a two-year-old, he doesn't know how many more times. So we might say we'll do two more times. So we want to make it concrete for him and hold up two fingers. We're going to go two more times, and then it's time to go. And after you've done that, then it's and with the last one, it's time to go. And when you do that, he's not going to say, okay, Mom, thank you very much. but then we know we've given him a forewarning. So when it's time to go, you can begin talking to him about, oh, in the car, we have your favorite book, or we have some Cheerios for you, or whatever it might be. And he is upset, and you can predict he might strike you, because he doesn't have the words yet to say, I hate to leave. I wish I could stay. So we're going to be ready to catch that hand so that he can't hit you. And when he starts to scream, we do empathize and say, I know you were having so much fun. You wished you could stay, but it's time to go. And when you're rubbing his back, what you're actually doing is calming his system, because he got this surge of adrenaline because he was having fun. So as we're taking him to the car, we're just very calmly saying, I know you wish you could stay. And we're rubbing his back and we're calming his system and then getting him in his car seat.
Does this make sense to you, Betsy?
Sounds great.
Stephanie, from a child provider perspective, when you have kids who are spirited in this way, anything you want to add that's worked also?
Well, the preparation is really key with these spirited children, and giving them a little bit of a warning, something we do in preschools all the time. It's almost cleanup time, 5 more minutes, and then something concrete like turning on music, which is a cue to the children that, okay, now it's cleanup time. Because when you prepare a child, one of the things we know about them developmentally is they really like to feel in charge. And when they've been given a chance to know what's coming up, then they feel like it was their idea, and they're much more willing to cooperate and to go along with it when they knew, oh yeah, that means cleanup time, so now I'll go ahead, or now. But also having something like Mary recommended in the car that they can look forward to what's happening next, because children live in the moment. They're so spontaneous, and they can't even think about the fact there could be a book in the car,
right,
or
Cheerios
waiting for them,
so
or
mentioning
snack
it.
Is next right after cleanup time. So when you mention those things, it really helps them make those transitions.
And, you know, Betsy, this is the kind of thing that in the fast-paced world that we live in, parents are, you know, have an agenda and they're trying to get everything done. And I think this is where the mindfulness comes for you, Betsy, is that the taking the deep breaths, you know, you have a child who's going to challenge you, you know, and they're great kids, you know, they have great spirits, but you have to do a lot of breathing. And there's just one other thing I want to add. You mentioned it was past lunchtime. And what I notice with spirited kids or high energy, intense kids, is their fuel tank gets empty pretty fast. And all of a sudden it hits them that they're tired and hungry. And so if you can catch them before they're tired and hungry and stop the activity sooner rather than later, the transition's going to go easier. Does that make sense, Betsy?
It does. Now, what about the times when we haven't let him start something, but he wants to do something that he's not allowed to do, like play with knives?
Right. There are definite limits you have to set, like there's no playing with knives, and that's where you have to stay calm and also provide something else, an alternative, and that helps. And I'm going to send you Mary's book, Raising Your Spirited Child. Two of her books, The Kids, Parents, and Power Struggles, is great, but I think you should start with Raising Your Spirited Child. It'll go by chapter, looking at his temperament, and it'll give you lots of hints about ways to talk with him that will really smooth this out. And keep in mind that he might be sensitive and, again, needs that kind of calmer, connecting reactions. Betsy, thank you so much for calling us this morning.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. We're talking about temperament, 877-372-KIDS. Let's take another call. We have Jennifer from San Francisco. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Good morning. What? Who's your child? How old? And what question do you have?
Yeah, so I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, two boys. And my 3-year-old, he just turned 3, and he started doing things like just being kind of willful. Like if I say that he can't have, another cookie, he'll say, "Shut up," or he'll say, "I'm not your friend." And occasionally he'll say, "Give me a timeout." When he knows he's doing something that he shouldn't be doing.
Well, he's so smart. Let's ask Mary about that. Go ahead, Mary Kuzinka.
Hi, Jennifer. Well, as Rona just said, your little boy is very smart. Actually, he's slightly developmentally advanced. We would not expect him to be practice asserting himself until he was about 4. So he's ahead of the game with you. So what he's doing is he's learning how to assert himself. And so when he says to you, you know, "Give me a timeout," or "No, you can't make me," what you want to do is you want to stay connected and say, you know, "I'm listening. You have something important to say." We say it this way. And we say, may I please have another cookie?" Or, "I wish I could do that." And we actually say to him, "Let's try that." And if he's like, "No," then you say, "We'll wait. And when you're ready, I will work with you or I will help you. But we're not going on until you say it in a way that's respectful and has an appropriate tone."
Jennifer, have you tried that?
I don't think so. I think I usually think of, you know, being more punitive. And so, no, that sounds like a really good way to react.
And you're bringing up a good point. You know, there's an automatic reaction, don't you think, about being punitive? You know, a lot of us were raised that way, and that's what we think the society wants us to do. But in fact, our role right now is teaching.
Right. And I think it's important to listen to your gut that says, "Oh, this is not okay." Because you're right. It's not okay. It's not respectful. But instead of just saying we're going to punish him, our role with a 3-year-old is recognizing, oh, he's reached a new developmental stage. He doesn't know how to do this. My job is to teach him. And it can actually just be part of the conversation.
That's wonderful. You know, Jennifer, we're about to go to a break. I'm wondering if you'd like to go to Mary's presentation in Redwood City on March from 7 to 9. Let our producer know. We're giving away some tickets, a couple of tickets to her presentations. And I also would like to send you Raising Your Spirited Child. You'll learn a lot from there. And also remember that your younger child's going to learn things also from your older child. So have a wonderful Sunday.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. We're talking about temperament and discipline, and we look forward to your calls. In a moment, we'll talk with you.
This week's Childhood Matters community calendar with events for parents and kids. Spot a whale at the Fort Bragg Whale Festival in McCarrick State Park today, March 21, from 11 to 6. For more information, call 707-961-6300. That's 707-961-6300. Learn about Northern California's incredible elephant seals at the Boat Works Building in Pacific Grove, Thursday, March 25, from 7:30 to 9. For more information, call 831-646-8734. That's 831-646-8734. Join renowned temperament specialist Mary Sheedy Kushinka for her presentation, Kids, Parents, and Power Struggles, Secrets to Effective Discipline. Tuesday, March 23 at Lark Theater in Larkspur, and Thursday, March 25 at Sequoia High School in Redwood City from 7 to 9. To register, visit www.parentsplaceonline.org. That's www.parentsplaceonline.org. Enjoy the sunshine in Santa Cruz at the largest paddle surfing competition in the world, Friday through Saturday, March 26 through 28 from 10 to 5. For more information, call 831-458-3648. That's 831-458-3648. Free H1N1 vaccinations are available to Berkeley residents at the Berkeley Public Health Center, Friday, March 26 from 9 to 11, and Saturday, March 27 from 11 to 1. For more information, call 510-981-5350. That's 510-981-5350. For additional information and more events, visit our website, childhoodmatters.org. And to submit events, email info@childhoodmatters.org. I'm Felsha Zuschlag.
You can have the greatest influence on your child's language development. The most important thing you can do is talk to your baby, starting at birth and in any language. When you talk, make eye contact and allow time for your child to respond with a look, smile, or sound. Reading with your baby from the time she is born will also help her learn to talk. If your child doesn't say any words by 14 months or put two words together by 2 years, check with your health provider. Remember, have fun talking and reading with your baby. This message is brought to you by Every Child Counts, First 5, Alameda County.
Finding help in the Bay Area is easier than ever before. Dial 211 to speak with a trained caring specialist who will match your needs with local services, including childcare, rent assistance, counseling, job services, health care, food, and so much more. Dial 211 for free confidential help, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Help starts here. Dial 211. 211 is a service of United Way, Eden I&R, and the Contra Costa Crisis Center.
Continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First 5.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Joining us in the studio is Mary Sheedy Kushinka, author of Raising Your Spirited Child, Kids, Parents, and Power Struggles, and Sleepless in America, and Stephanie Agnew, Parent Education Coordinator of Parents Place in San Mateo County. And we love hearing from you this morning about your child's temperament and discipline issues. 1-877-372-KIDS. We're going to start now taking calls from Lewis from Daly City. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
I was calling because my daughter, her name is Jasmine, she's 2 years old, and she has a very, very hot temper. Like, I have my son, he's 3 years old, and he's very docile, but she is very, very hot tempered, especially when it comes with my wife. Like, she's very possessive. If I try to show my wife some affection, give her a hug, or even my son, she gets very aggressive and wants to strike my son, or she just tries to, like, separate me or hit me.
So, Luis, right,
Do you spend any time one-on-one with her without mom there?
Me and Jasmine?
Yeah.
Well, not one-on-one. Like, if I do have the kids, I'll have them together, but not really one-on-one. Because she cries whenever mom's not there. Like, when my wife goes to school, she'll just throw tantrums if she's awake.
And is she in any kind of child care with someone else other than you?
My mom.
And does she do the same thing with your mom?
She gets along a little better with my mom, but I mean, when she throws a tantrum, she's just get aggressive.
So she has lots of strong feelings. And I'm going to ask our guests here to respond. And I also want to say that I find that when this happens, sometimes dads or whoever it's happening to kind of become more reluctant or resistant to spending that one-on-one time. And yet that's what also builds that trusting relationship. So I'll see what my guests say. Mary?
Good morning, Louis. I would agree with Rona in that one of the things that you want to do is have a predictable time or activity that you do with your daughter. For some people, it's dad does bath time, or it's one night a week that dad takes Jasmine and plays with her or does something special, so that it's predictable and that you develop a ritual of connection that builds that relationship for you. The other piece, there's a development piece of this that is very normal for two-year-olds. And Jasmine is an intense child. She's passionate about life, and it comes through in her reactions. And so she is working through how do we share mommy with the other people in our family. And that's where we involve her in that family hug. And we say to her, yeah, it's hard, but we all hug together. And we bring her in that our family works together. And we're offering her comfort. And we say, yes, it's hard to share with mommy, but we all love mommy. So it's that combination of teaching her about sharing and being part of the family, which is developmental. And then the other is building the relationship with predictable times that you spend with her on a very regular basis.
And not to be sort of like hurt, you know, again, it's easy to take this personally and not to be turned off by it. That would then cause you to sort of, move back even more. Stephanie Agnew, when you've worked in, I know you work with parents a lot, but you've also worked a lot in childcare settings. And I'm sure you see this, you've seen this often, where a child might have that kind of reaction to one parent or another.
Oh, absolutely. And I was just thinking, just before you said that, the very same thing about how one parent who is being rejected tends to withdraw so much more. And when you can just empathize with the child and say, I know you miss mommy, but I really want to be with you, even though you hit me, even though you yell at me. I love you. I'm here with you. I want to be with you, and we're going to have fun. And you present that level of self-confidence yourself as a parent. The child feeds off of that. And with the predictability that Mary mentioned of having that special time together, the relationship can really grow.
The great piece about that, too, there's research from Jay Belsky that shows, first of all, when you have that regular time with her, you develop a relationship with her. So you get that positive feedback. But the other thing is it makes your wife happy. And when your wife is happy, she also is more loving and attentive to you. So by building that relationship with Jasmine, you also strengthen the relationship with your wife.
And having her one-on-one, too, without her brother there.
Without the brother is key in terms of building that relationship. Louise, I just want to also ask you one more thing. You said she has a real temper. Anyone else in the family intense and spirited like that?
With a hot temper?
Yeah.
Yeah, me.
I thought you might be saying that. Because what we find is that, you know, when there are two intense people in the family, it becomes reactive. You know, she reacts, you react, she reacts. So what I really think will turn a lot of things around, if you have downtime with her, you sit down on the floor and you play with her, and so that the two of you can kind of learn about each other in a more less stressful way. So the book, Raising Your Spirited Child, is perfect for you, because Mary has in that book also a way for you to look at your own temperament and see how it fits with your child. So we're going to send that to you, and keep listening. I think you'll get some other good hints, Louise.
Thank you very much.
Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
You're listening to Childhood Matters. Important info for parents and child caregivers.
Brought to you in part by First Five Marin.
We'll take more calls now. We're talking about temperament and discipline. It's a wonderful, complex, and really important piece of child rearing. We're going to talk with Sophia now from Hayward. Good morning, Sophia.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Great. How old are your children?
I have two. I have a daughter that's 4 and a half, and then I have a daughter that's going to be 1 next month.
Okay. And what's your question?
My question is that my 4 and a half year old, she's a really loving, giving child. She's really helpful, and she's really positive and just really, really good and calm. But the thing is lately, within this last year of me having another baby, I've realized that sometimes when we go out to like a store or to a restaurant or something, she always expects something. So sometimes we'll go to the store just to get soap or something, and we'll try to run in and run out, and she sees something and she wants something, and I tell her, you know, that's what we didn't come here for, that, you know, maybe next time we'll take you somewhere. And she flips out. Her demeanor totally changes. She, you know, tries to do like a guilt trip type of thing. She says that I hate her and that I don't love her, and
yeah,
herself, and she doesn't like herself,
and it breaks your heart, right?
Yes. And why do I do this to her?
Yeah.
And it's totally opposite of what she normally is. She's really rational with other kids. Other kids will sometimes throw a tantrum in front of her, and she says, it's okay, you know, and she'll explain everything I'm trying to explain to her with other people. But when it comes to her at certain moments.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sophia, you're the only person in her life who went and had another kid. You know, so you're in a whole different category, and certainly you shouldn't feel guilty for that at all. Stephanie Agnew, you have two daughters who are close in age there. Maybe you can respond a little bit to this Sophia's great question here.
Well, this is a great question, especially with a child this age, because by the time they're 4 and a half, they really are understanding a lot more about what's happening in their world, and they're used to shopping, and they know what's out there, and they have things in their mind that they want, and they really want to be able to assert themselves. And again, this is showing her developmental progress in a lot of ways. But it may, perhaps if you talk with her before going into the store, you know what kind of a store you're going into and what sort of things might be there, and explain to her exactly what you're shopping for, engage her in the process of looking for the things that you have on your list, letting her know if you're not willing to buy her anything, that this is not a time when you can get anything, but if she sees something she really likes, maybe you can put it on a list for her birthday or for Christmas or Hanukkah or whenever the next holiday might come along when she could have perhaps that thing. And so she has it to look forward to. It's not just a black or white situation, you can never have it, but we're just not going to get it today. And then maybe help again with the transition, having something else in the car or something she knows she can have a snack when she gets in the car, something you can prepare her for so she doesn't feel like she's being completely left without anything.
That's great. And also, Mary Krasinka, I think maybe you could add a piece here about how intensity can go up, you know, sometimes under stress, or what you think she's dealing with.
Well, spirited kids, again, they do have that intensity. It is, it's physiological for them. They do have a more rapid heart rate and pulse rate. There's more activity in the right side of the brain. So when they get upset, they can go from 0 to 100 very quickly. So a couple of things. One is, as Stephanie said, not only would I talk with her, but you might even have some kind of concrete token or picture that you give to her, she puts in her pocket, that says, this is not a buying day. So not only are we saying it, but we're showing it. The other is, I would plan for success. So you don't take her when she's hungry or tired, as Rona said. And then sometimes you may need to say too, is that if you do beg, then you need to know that we will leave the store and you can decide. And so she starts in the store begging and say to her, I'm sorry, you know, you can decide to stop and we'll continue, or you can decide to continue crying and we will leave. The choice will be yours. And then if she continues, you leave. Now she'll throw a fit and you say, and she might even say, I'll stop. And you say, I'm sorry. Next time you can make a different choice and leave the store.
And I think underlying a lot of this, Sophia, is the fact that you want to make sure and have one-on-one time with her without the one-year-old so that she remembers she's still the apple of your eye. So, you know, you put these other strategies into place, and then you also remember to have that one-on-one time, because it is strange for a child to share their mommy, you know, with an adorable one-year-old. And, you know, it's her way of, I think when she melts down, she's sort of saying, I want it all and I don't have anything now. And, you know, there's a lot of messages underneath that also. Sophia, we'll send you the book Kids, Parents, and Power Struggles. It's another wonderful one of Mary's. And thanks so much for talking with us this morning.
All right. Thank you guys very much. It's very helpful.
Okay. Have a good day. Let's take a listen now to what a couple of other parents had to say about discipline and temperament.
I'm assistant producer Felsha Zuschlag, and this week I spoke with two mothers at a Berkeley middle school about their children and experiences on temperament.
I have 5 children, 21, 15, 14, 12, and 3.
14, 2 10-year-olds, and a 7-year-old.
What would you consider your children's temperament to be like?
Talkative, very outgoing, dramatic.
They're all different. The 14-year-old temperament is very good. One of the 10-year-old twins can be angry at times, and the other one is kind of mild. And then the 7-year-old one is always mild-mannered.
What type of behavior did your children exhibit when they were younger that helped you understand what their temperament were?
Well, they changed as they got older. My older kids were a lot more quieter. My youngest one is a lot more expressive, so he might calm down in the years. And my other kids got more verbal, you know, a lot more explosive, you know, personality-wise.
The 14-year-old one is always the same. She's always mild-mannered. The 10-year-old ones, they tend to fight. And the 7-year-old, her temperament has always been good.
Are there any behavior issues that you're currently dealing with?
Just the dramatic part. You know, everything has to be a TV show. Everybody wants to be actors and actresses.
No, they're very much all pretty good kids.
Do you discipline your children differently according to their temperaments?
No. My methods seem to work with all of them.
Yes, I do. My 14-year-old, I've never really had to punish her because her temperament has always been well. The 10-year-olds, yes, I do punish them, and their punishment just varies with taking stuff away from them that they like. The 7-year-old, time is still early.
Any other thoughts that you'd like to add?
Well, you just have to remember that, you know, every child is different. Regardless of how many children you have, everybody has their own character.
For Childhood Matters, I'm Felsha Zuschlag.
Thank you, Felsha, and thank you to those parents. And I think, Mary, one of the things I want to say here and ask you about, too, is we tend to label sort of those mild-mannered kids as good and the intense ones and the more spirited ones as, you know, these parents didn't say bad, but, you know, they're the ones who are the trouble sometimes. And I think what I want people to understand is that temperament isn't about good or bad, but that some kids are more challenging for parents, especially when they're very strong-willed.
Well, there's two pieces that come into that. One is for the child themselves is that they have that more reactive system. So they are more intense or more dramatic. And I liked, as I was listening to those parents, is that they used wonderful labels of expressive and dramatic. These are traits we value in adults, and we need to develop them in positive ways. But the other piece of this is how, as Rona said earlier, it matches or mismatches our own temperament. So there's a genetic element to it. So if I'm an intense and passionate person, odds are I'm going to have an intense and passionate child too. And we can appreciate that and also understand we can trigger one another because that intensity is actually catchy. We can have that child who is highly sensitive. If we're not sensitive, we don't understand it. If we're highly sensitive, we're coping ourselves, and it can be hard to help them.
So that piece, that understanding of one's own temperament, it, you know, how do you help parents do that?
Well, again, in raising your spirited child and in kids, parents, and power struggles, I have a little survey that you can take that has your child's temperament traits and then your own. And the books talk about how does that match or mismatch and how do we work together. So if you're both persistent, you tend to lock in. And you have to look at that child and say, I understand you were committed to your goals. Where did you think you got it?
Very good. So that's where we want to look at that. We're talking about temperament, discipline. Give us a call with your questions. We'll take a few minute break and we'll be right back to talk with you.
An organization doing great community work benefiting children 5 and under? First 5 Contra Costa is offering community grants of up to $10,000 to support neighborhood cleanups, new or improved playgrounds, parent education, and healthy lifestyles. Nonprofit organizations, city agencies, community groups, public adult schools, and libraries are encouraged to apply. Applicants must attend an informational workshop by the end of March. To learn more, visit first5cc.org or call 925-771-7300. Brought to you by your local First 5.
Did you know that reading to kids in an early age has an impact on their success later in life? Research shows children have parents that read to them perform better in school. Help your child get a leg up on learning by reading aloud together every day. Show your child how reading is used everywhere by reading street signs, maps, and menus out loud. Also, take regular field trips to the library to check out books and participate in free story time activities. For more tips on early childhood literacy, contact your local Bay Area First 5 County Commission by visiting first, the number 5, kids.org/bay. Brought to you by your local First 5.
One of the hardest things a parent faces is how to set clear limits with love. Here are some tips to keep in mind. Have clear rules and expectations. Have reasonable consequences for misbehavior and acknowledge respectful behavior. And try to understand why your child is acting out. Is it stress or anxiety? For more information and tips on how to discipline your child, visit www.childhoodmatters.org. And remember that world peace begins at home. This message is brought to you by the David B. Gold Foundation.
What a day. From the grocery store to the doctor's office, it's nice to sit back and let Sophia play.
Definitely, but I feel it's important to have the kids in special programs. I'm always learning how competitive school is, even at this young age.
Me too. I worry I'm not doing enough to teach Sophia the skills she'll need, even though she's just 4. I read an article yesterday that said play is a great way for children to learn.
So you're telling me that when my kids play at preschool or at home, they're learning something?
The article said play is the way children develop their understanding of the world. So when kids play with friends or pretend to count money or rhyme words or build with blocks, they're actually learning in different ways, socially, physically, and intellectually. They learn how to think critically and problem solve, making them more confident.
That makes sense. The other day, Danny was so proud when he and Sophia built a fire station in the sandbox. He is learning when he's having fun, so we can relax and encourage the learning they do when they play.
Mommy, Mommy, look what I made!
Wow, you built a ramp to make your cars race faster.
This message brought to you by the Early Childhood Funders. Play. It's the way young children learn.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First 5.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
We're talking with Mary Sheedy Krasinka, author of Raising Your Spirited Child, Kids, Parents, and Power Struggles, and also Sleepless in America, and Stephanie Agnew, Parent Education Coordinator of Parents Place in San Mateo County. And Stephanie has done an amazing job keeping Mary very busy this week. She's going to be in all different counties throughout the week giving fabulous talks, and we are giving away tickets for someone who calls in from Marin. There's a talk Tuesday on March 23rd in Marin, and we're giving away tickets in Redwood City for Thursday and Santa Rosa on Monday. So go to the website. What's the website, Steph?
www.parentsplaceonline.org.
And you can find out where she's going to be, and I'm going to wind up being at one, too, so maybe I'll see you there. Let's take another call. We have Michelle from Oakland with us. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Rona. One of the questions that I have is about my very spirited five-year-old, extremely active, and we have a situation where he'll be doing something that we don't necessarily want him to do, say throwing a ball in the house, and his goal with throwing this ball, for example, will be to get it into the light fixture that's hanging in the middle of the room, and we'll say, stop throwing the ball, and if you I don't want you to throw the ball into the light fixture, you need to stop or you're going to lose the ball. And he'll stop throwing the ball toward the light fixture, and when we go to take the ball, he'll say, but you didn't say to stop throwing the ball. You said stop throwing the ball into the light fixture.
Oh, so he's practicing to be a lawyer. I get it.
Yes, he is.
Picking up every bit of innuendo there.
So you get frustrated because he's so clever.
Yes.
And so your question is, like, how do you work with a child who's that, you know, smart and strong-willed and one step ahead of you?
All the time.
Yeah, okay. He wears you down, doesn't he, Michelle?
Every single time, you know. We explain to him, you know, law school will be right around the corner, but for right now, what I mean is this.
Yeah.
But it's hard to maintain that kind of...
Yes, and I just want to say, having experienced a child like this in my life, they turn out to be fabulous adults. Mary, a piece of advice here for Michelle.
Well, as Rona said, your son is very clever. And I think this is a piece where humor can be actually very much a part of your parenting. He is amazing of the way he can think so quickly. And it's okay to laugh about that, of you are clever, and appreciate that at the same time. Recognizing that, okay, clever little fellow here, what we're saying is, we're looking for the fuel source. What he's telling you is that he needs activity. And so one of the things for you to kind of outsmart this clever son of yours is to say, okay, I can see you need some physical activity, or you need to be active. So let's go outside. So, or let's find something entirely different to do in the house that might be, you know, jumping on a mini trampoline, or you make a little obstacle course for him in the house. But the bottom line is looking at, he needs a physical outlet, and your job is to redirect him to something appropriate.
Great. And I'm going to actually try and squeeze in one more call here. So, Michelle, I'm going to send you Kids, Parents, and Power Struggle book. And let our producer know if you want to go over to Marin on Tuesday night. It's a great chance to hear Mary speak and learn a lot more. And, just eat well, sleep well, and keep your energy up, because you have a very wonderful child that you need to have your energy for. Thanks for calling this morning. Let's squeeze in the last call from Carol in San Mateo. Hi, Carol. We have just a couple of minutes left.
Good morning.
Hi.
I just have a quick question. What do you do when there are changes in your child's life beyond your power to control? For example, we had to do a sudden daycare change, and the behavior is really extreme now. So he'll be hitting me and... really, my son's 3 going on 4, so it's kind of like he's taking this big step back.
Yeah. No, great question. Stephanie Agnew.
Well, changes in the environment like that can have a huge effect on your child's behavior, and I think you're very insightful to recognize that. And it is out of your control. You needed to make the daycare change, and he probably will adjust. It will just take him some time. Maybe what would help, though, would be to try to simplify the rest of your life as much as possible. cut down on any other outside activities he may be having, make sure he's getting to bed on a regular schedule, eating on a regular schedule, maybe not as much social activity on the weekend, so that you have a little more downtime with him, a little more one-on-one time with him to support him in other ways and simplify the rest of his life, keeping it as predictable as possible with his regular sleep schedules and eating schedules, and then just give him a little time to adjust to the new daycare situation.
Mary? The other thing I think that I would add with that is teaching him we're a problem-solving family. And so we ask him, how can we make this better? And one of the things might be that you make a storyboard that shows him, you know, you'll be going to school. This is what happens. Mommy picks you up at this time. Let's take your blanket, your stuffed animal.
Beautiful.
We can make it better.
Really nice. And let our producer know, Carol, if you want to go to the talk in Redwood City on Thursday with Mary. Thank you so much. And we're just out of time. So, Mary, as we wind up here, the four C's that we talked about before we started the show this morning, what are they?
As a parent, remember, we want to connect, stay connected. Your influence, your power is in the relationship. Calm them. You have to calm them to get them working with you. You need clear limits and expectations so you're predictable. They know what to expect. And the fourth is collaborate. Teach them the skills to what to do, what to say, that's appropriate ways to express those feelings. And when you do that, your job gets easier because the child is able to do it himself.
And how can people find out both, you know, your resources about your books and the work you do? You even do consultations by phone. What's the website, Mary?
It's parentchildhelp.com.
Thank you, Mary Shidi Kasinka. And I know the next time you're in the Bay Area, you'll come back here for sure, won't you?
I would love to.
Great. And Stephanie Agnew, tell us again how people can find all these amazing workshops and also the other things that Parents Place does. You're doing work all the time in the community.
Yes, we have Parents Place offices all over the Bay Area, from Sonoma all the way down to Palo Alto, 5 offices at all, and also in San Francisco and San Mateo and Marin. The website is www.parentsplaceonline.org, and then you can click to the different areas or regions that you're interested in to find out about classes and all the other programs we have to offer.
And thank you for bringing Mary this morning
with
you.
Thanks for having us, Rona.
It's a pleasure.
We love to be here.
And I want people to know you can go to preventiveounce.org. Go to my website, and you'll find it there. You can do a free temperament assessment on your child. Don't go away. Right now, we're going to have our community report. It's about Camp Galileo Summer Learning Program coming up with Lacey Daniel. And again, I will see both of you, our guests here, on Thursday when I go to one of the trainings. So here we go.
I'm Associate Producer Lacey Daniel, and this is the Childhood Matters Community Report. Budget cuts to education have a major impact on the amount of arts and creative work our children do. This week I spoke to Glenn Tripp, founder and CEO of Galileo Learning, about how summer is the perfect time for kids to exercise different parts of their brains.
The issue is that the work that a lot of us end up doing later in life relies on collaborative, creative problem-solving process that schools are not spending a lot of time on these days. And so I think that it's possible for kids in the summertime to engage in programs that really help fill that gap. And bringing together the other kids with similar interests who together grapple with solving fun and intellectually stimulating problems in a group setting. And I think that's a really important skill set to develop, both in terms of the work that people end up doing someday and in terms of personal fulfillment, because I believe that creative action is a kind of activity that's just personally fulfilling as well.
So what are some of the creative activities that kids can engage in?
Well, a lot of our programming at Galileo embraces an approach called design challenge learning, which is a fancy way of saying that we give kids some sort of challenge that they then work with other people to solve. For example, we might say to the kids, you're going to design a house that's at least 15 inches tall, and here's a bunch of supplies, and your challenge is to make it that tall and have it withstand a test on an earthquake simulation table. But, you know, another thing that we're trying to do is break down the barriers between science and art, because when scientists and engineers engage in design work, You know, it's not like there's a science cubby and then there's an art cubby. I mean, you're using creative design and visual design all the time with just about anything you do in a collaborative work environment these days.
That was Glenn Tripp of Galileo Learning. Enrollment for Galileo summer camps is now open and scholarships are available. For more information, visit galileo-learning.com. For Childhood Matters, I'm Lacey Daniel.
Thank you to our guests and all of our listeners. I'm grateful to our team, senior producer Zan West, producers Lacey Daniel and Felsha Zuschlag, Lorenzo Pasola at the controls, and Peter B. Collins of Collins Media Services. I'm forever grateful to my children, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina. This is Nurse Sirona saying goodbye until next week. And parents, remember, spend time with your kids and don't forget to take good care of yourself. Childhood matters, and so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters.
Produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media. Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.